ABC Radio Australia.
Well, it's been just over a year now since Tonga was rocked on its foundations by the eruption of the Hunga Tonga Hunga Ha'apai volcano. Whole island communities were displaced by the eruption and ensuing tsunami on the 15th of January 2022, as housing and infrastructure was destroyed and four people lost their lives. An exhibition has now been launched in Tonga to commemorate the one-year anniversary of the eruption. Cabinet Minister Samiu Vaipulu says Tonga is still recovering from last year's disaster. Here he is speaking at a commemoration ceremony over the weekend.
And we mark this first anniversary of this disaster. It is almost impossible to comprehend the power, the magnitude of the eruption. A year on, studies continue to try to understand the full extent of its impact.
One person who was an outlet for news from Tonga about the eruption and its aftermath was Brisbane-based broadcaster Suli Lei, who last year was bestowed with a special royal honour that allows him to speak on behalf of Tonga's king. He joins us now on the program. Good morning, Mr. Lei, and welcome to Pacific Beat.
Malolele, and good morning. It's great to be here.
Yesterday, hundreds of people packed the Cathedral of St. Mary in Nuku'alofa for this commemoration. Were there similar services held in Brisbane where you are?
Absolutely, and not just in Brisbane, but most of the Tongan denominations across Australia and the diaspora community. Definitely, it was a reflective mood yesterday, and also on Saturday as well on Pacifica TV and radio, we also broadcast a special reflective program, bringing together some of the various church ministers from around Australia through that program as well.
So what did it mean to the people of Tonga to be able to reflect on those terrible events of 12 months ago through these ceremonies over the weekend?
I think it's actually brought up a lot of emotions as people have sort of paused, taken a moment to reflect of what actually occurred back 12 months ago, and also a time to look at the support that the diaspora put together over the last 12 months, you know, through taking of supplies back to Tonga through containers. And in addition to that as well, there was obviously a lot of monetary support sent back to family and friends, and to also sort of look back and see how have we gone with the recovery process back in Tonga.
And I understand there was an exhibition also held as part of the anniversary commemoration. I think that was in Tonga. Do you know what that exhibition involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So government departments, NGOs and some of the private sector got together and put on an exhibition which was held at the Queen Salote Memorial Hall in the heart of Nuku'alofa. Those displays included each department from the government, the NGOs, had displays with photographs, pictures showing the relief effort, showing the damage of various areas and showing efforts up to this stage where they've gone in terms of recovery, rebuilding the infrastructure that was impacted, both natural infrastructure as well as the physical infrastructure. Of course, there was, you know, geologists display and so forth. So it was an opportunity for both the public as well as various departments to come together to walk through those displays and reflect and to see the journey of what had occurred in Tonga right through until the recovery efforts up to date.
And speaking of that infrastructure that has been damaged and destroyed, Mango and Atata Islands especially were devastated by the disaster and they're now totally deserted. Their populations have just been resettled in new communities in recent weeks. As far as you know, have those resettlements all gone smoothly?
Yeah, it's interesting. Displacement was definitely one of the key issues that the Tongan government obviously had to deal with in the wake of the tsunami and the volcanic eruption. And some of those people were residing in community halls, church halls for almost a year until just like, as you've mentioned, a few weeks ago, where they've been relocated. I mean, generally speaking, and I was in Tonga a few weeks ago, that process has gone quite smoothly. But at the same token, that you know, there's a few members of those community groups that a longing to go back to the islands, keeping in mind that their ancestors are buried on those islands, that there's unique links to those areas. And of course, for some of the people from those islands, they were fishermen and so forth, and now they've been moved to completely different locations and areas. So it's a big adjustment for these people, not to withstand also the trauma that people have gone through as well, and being located, not going back home, but going to a different area as well, also conjures constantly the reason that why we were moved in the first place. So it's an interesting transition for these people. But of course, the government and the other NGOs have worked hard to rebuild some infrastructure in new areas for them. We need to take the advice from scientists and geologists and so forth in preparation that this could happen again in the future, and their islands have been deemed not safe for them to rebuild there. So hopefully moving forward, they're in a lot more safer zones for protection against future tsunamis.
I was reading earlier a story of a man, I believe he was from Atata Island, and he got actually washed out to sea, and he had to swim some incredible distance, and then he basically washed up on the beach at Nuku'alofa, and his whole family thought that he had died, and they stayed up all night kind of praying that he had survived. Have stories like this of this kind of survival, have they, staggered you? What do you think when you hear these stories?
I think for us living in the diaspora, and given Tonga Tapu's geography, it's a very flat island, of course. And I think well before this tsunami happened, people were always the Tongan community would often joke and say, oh gosh, when a tsunami ever happened, Tonga Tapu would be gone. It's as flat as a pancake, there's no mountains and so on. And then when this actually occurred, the immediate concern from diaspora straight away was that the death toll would be huge, given Tonga's geography. However, hearing those survival stories and hearing that the death toll was so incredibly low was just absolutely, that was so shocking in itself. I believe that everyone, all experts included, were expecting a much higher death toll. So that survival story was phenomenal when we heard it. And as we got the statistics coming in terms of what areas were damaged and what areas survived, I think even to now we're just thanking God that it could have been so much worse.
Mm. This is Pacific Beats on ABC Radio Australia, and we're speaking with Brisbane-based broadcaster and Tongan community member Sully Lay. Sully, with the official royal role that you now hold, along with your responsibilities as a broadcaster, have you personally felt additional pressure to be a pillar of strength for the Tongan community over the last year?
That's a very interesting question. I don't think I've felt any additional pressure. I think as a community, we all pull together no matter what role we play in the community. Everyone knows their role. They know what they're expected to do. If anything else, it's just been a really honouring opportunity, and I think it's probably quite appropriate here to acknowledge the great work of Tonga's High Commissioner in Canberra, Her Royal Highness Princess Angelika Latifuipeka Tuku'aho, of course, is the only daughter of His Majesty King Tupou VI, who led what she named the Pilia Tauhala National Committee. So Her Royal Highness brought together a national committee. I was a member on that committee as well, and Her Royal Highness coordinated the diaspora communities of each state and territory across Australia so that there was a national consensus on how to work in together with the support that we did from the Australian community anyway to the Kingdom of Tonga. And part of that was that Her Royal Highness was able to negotiate through Swire shipping containers. A total of 42 containers were sent from New South Wales, Victoria, Canberra and Brisbane communities to send back to Tonga, in addition to multiple fundraising initiatives and donations from the Australian business sector, as well as other embassies that had their embassies based in Canberra. Phenomenal effort, and it was an absolute pleasure to be part of that, and just to feel that we're doing something as a community and working together for the good of Tonga and for the rebuild of the nation.
Certainly. And the eruption was the largest ever recorded by modern equipment, and there were some simply staggering statistics which continue to be released. For example, the eruption actually propelled water vapour beyond the Earth's atmosphere into space, as well as causing 25,000 lightning events in 5 minutes. Did the people of Tonga have any idea that the Hunga Tonga Hunga Ha'apai volcano contain this much power?
Talking to people on the ground during this trip over to Tonga a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to so many different people, from business owners that have businesses along on the waterfront to people living inland in some of the villages there. And certainly the feedback I received was that the days leading up to the actual eruption, that there was a lot of noise coming from the volcano. People were looking out to that direction of the ocean from Nuku'alofa, and they could see there was like a storm brewing on the horizon. There was a lot of lightning and so on. They also said to me that the water looked like it was almost boiling at points along the waterfront. It was the ocean was swirling. Some of the ship captains told me similar scenarios. So the signs were quite different from, you know, when you have an earthquake or a cyclone and so on. So this was quite new for people. But when it actually exploded, they said that nothing prepared you for the seismic boom. And just the magnitude of the eruption itself is something. And then, of course, the continued eruption after the initial seismic boom was like bombs going off in the distance. It was like a war zone. It was quite something they'd never experienced before. And, of course, we only know from looking at the pictures on television and how that massive mushroom cloud just starts in the Tongan Islands, just spreads across neighboring nations. It was so huge. And then in Tonga, they were with tsunamis in the past, you've seen, you know, the water would recede, but in this case the water just surged from where it was and it went up so high, you know, into buildings along the waterfront, destroying and taking everything in its way and then sucking it back out to the ocean. And there's, like, talking to some of the doctors at Viola Hospital as well, the trauma that young children are experiencing, and they are very grateful to the Pacifica medical team from New Zealand who sent a lot of counsellors on shore. I think there's a lot of psychological, I suppose you could say, damage that people have experienced that perhaps even now we haven't seen the full impact of. That will be something come over time. I did speak to some employers who said they lost employees who are not returning to work at all just due to the trauma of the whole experience. So I think there's some things we won't really see immediately, but there'll be a longer term impact that will come down the line.
Yeah, it's an incredible story, and I think we're all still just trying to get our heads around it. But no, it sounds like you're doing some fantastic work and fantastic work being done by all members of the Tongan community. Thanks very much for joining us, Suli.
Thanks so much, Nick. Malo aupito.
That was Brisbane-based broadcaster and Tongan community member Suli Lay.